Blog Talk Radio.
Hello world, happy Monday. You're listening to the Garden of Enlightenment with Liu Wildog and Weaver of Dreams, Poetic Picasso and Grey Eyes Smith. Tonight's show is brought to you by a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets. We also have anthologies available on amazon.com under the same moniker, so feel free to check those out and help support these shows. And tonight's show is based on front page picks, contest pieces, and open poetry. And the contest was a quote from Eleanor Roosevelt saying, "If life were predictable, it would cease to be life and be without flavor," by Eleanor Roosevelt. So that said, I'm going to go check the studio here and we'll see who calls. All right, we have Kate, aka Weaver of Dreams. Hello, Weaver.
Hello, good evening, good
How are
morning.
You?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm having a nice glass of ice cold Coke. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling. Okay, I'm going to bring on another caller here. Welcome, area code 8585. Is that you, Lawrence?
It is indeed. Good evening. Hey, Katie.
Good evening, Lawrence.
Good evening, Lawrence. So this is Lawrence Yvonne, a wonderful poet. And we have one more caller. Hello, area code 111.
Hello?
Is that your name? Hi, Naomi.
Yeah, it's me. Hi, Lana. Hi, Kate.
Hello,
hi, Gray.
Hey, hi, Naomi.
Hi.
Hi.
All right, Katie, what do we have first?
First of all, we have Hourglass by Diane D. And Naomi, would you be so very kind as to read this for us?
So hurry. Hourglass. I would snatch the blue from the skies and steal the rings from around Saturn to dance with you on the ocean floor to the song of our footsteps on water. Just breathing the journey of our dance and the hazel of your shimmering eyes is hovering beside an unbroken bubble that bobs through the hues of our ginger. Your face wore daintiness like a sunset no painter has ever captured, like popping a balloon filled with glitter or clicking your heels on paving stones. But like grains of sand in the hourglass, I watched you slide idle through the crack and saw the wisp of your preservation fading in the static like an old 80s TV. End poem.
Beautiful read, Naomi. And that's such a touching poem. You can feel the love and the passion in the first three stanzas and then the sadness in the final stanza where it says, I watched you slide through that crack and saw the wisps of your preservation fading into the static like an old 80s TV. Beautifully written and excellent read as well. What did you think, Katie?
Yes, absolutely beautiful. There's not one stanza I can pick out that's better than any other. It's so good. That last one is wonderful. But the one I really like so much is just breathing the journey of our dance into the hazel of your shimmering eyes is hovering inside an unbroken bubble that bobbed, sorry, my voice is going already, that bobbed through the hues of our ginger. That is just, you're inside a bubble, for goodness sake. That is wonderful. Yes, I really enjoy that. And I would also snatch the blue from the skies and steal the rings from around Saturn, because that sounds like fun. Thank you, Diane. I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Laurent, what did you think?
I liked it quite a bit. Diane does a good job with this. It's not a rhyming poem, but it has a rhyme of its own. It's just in its cadence. But snatch the blue from the skies and steal the rings from around Saturn, dance with you on the ocean floor, the song of our footsteps on water. That last line especially, very evocative. I like it a lot. Excellent piece.
Well said. Thank you, Lauren. And Naomi, you read it. What did you think?
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. You know, really deserving of a front page pick here, as I see by Kevin himself, because he congratulated her on the poem in the comments. You know, so well penned, you know, that stanza, that those lines that Lorrain recited are just beautiful. But also all through, you know, just dreaming the journey of our dance and the hazel of your shimmering eye is hovering inside an unbroken bubble that bob through the hues of our ginger. And then, you know, it's so sad in that last stanza, you know, but like grains of sand in the hourglass, I watch you slide idle through that crack, saw the wisp of our preservation fading like the static, like on old 80s TV, so that, you know, there's a sadness that comes in the end there, Very emotive poem, I found. So bravo, Diane.
Wonderful comment. Thank you, Naomi. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have White, White Woe by Arlist. I don't know if this particular poet is male or female. Could anybody tell me?
It's a male.
Okay.
Yeah.
In that case,
a male.
In that case, I'll do it with a deep voice, shall I? No. Laurent,
okay.
Would you please read this for us?
Yes, I'll be happy to. White, white woe. I hear his voice on the water. The starry train rises to the sky, arms outstretched in robes of white. It is Jeremiah preaching to a company of swans, the only ones who listen now. How the gold has lost its luster. The fine gold becomes gall. The sacred gems are scattered at every street corner. As a child, I shared a pet white duck with my brother. Fowl never learned its name. Never fetched a ball. Never cuddled in delight. Never fell asleep at my feet. One morning, we rose early to find its wire cage empty. A few creased and bloody feathers lay suffocated on the lawn. Later, I learned our neighbor's dog had charged and killed the duck. And later, I learned that that is what big dogs do. As I look back today in this hour of loss, I see that woe never loses its luster. It is the only solace we can cling to when death is charging in. End poem.
We'll read one. And that's a heart-wrenching poem, you know. He really captures the essence of woe, you know, and it's palpable. You can feel his loss in this rite, which is amazing. And I thought it was a fabulous rite, you know. It really captures your imagination and the loss of this wonderful pet that he had, even though it didn't cuddle and it didn't bring a ball and it never slept at his feet. He still loved that duck, and the loss of it is palpable. So amazing rite and fabulously read, Laurent. Weaver, what did you think?
Oh, very, very sad. Very sad story. I love the learning curve, though. I thought that was beautifully done. That we woke up in the, and found the feathers, bloody feathers, in the grass, and then learned that the neighbor's dog had killed their duck. And what I thought was particularly clever was, even later I learned, that is what big dogs do. And there's a life lesson for you. Yes, it's awful for a child to lose a pet. It is the most heartrending thing. The children don't understand. They just, you know, they don't understand why that happened. And it's very difficult to that young to try and explain. But I thought it was very, very well done. I really thought it brought across the sadness. But, yes, thank you very much for sharing with us, Arlist.
Great comment, thank you. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, it's always a lesson learned. You know, that's one of the first lessons you learn with dealing with death is often the death of a pet. I remember when my dog, he was killed by a stupid neighbor that shot him. And, and I didn't go to school for about 2 or 3 days because I was just crying. But, that was the first real, encounter with death. And he tells the story well here, you know, and it's very, it's emotive and very relatable, right, to, I think, to all of us out there who had a pet when they were young. So very well done, Arlist, indeed. really enjoyed this write.
Thank you, Naomi. And Lawrence, you read it. What did you think?
At first, I thought the first stanza in part two was perfect preparations for mocking the duck who would never, you know, fetch a ball, cuddle, or fall asleep at their feet. Then, of course, the feathers and the dog and whatnot allowed the poem to assume its proper place, something sad and poignant. But the first stanza completely puzzled me. The only thing I can figure is that it's there for contrast. Jeremiah, the preacher, who is sad about gold losing its luster. A sacred gems are scattered in every street corner. I mean, it's a poor way of describing it. It's really a good metaphor, but I enjoy the counterpoint between the two.
Thank you, Lauren. Great comment. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have Walking Over the Landscape Like a Giant by Lilia. And I think we have a SoundCloud.
Okay, I will play that.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
The chimney sunk like a ship on a field blue. Mermaids are playing and snake bouts are crawling. Walking over the landscape like a giant. With a Roman sword, a century old dead guard. Emotional sigh looks out from the tower.
Wow, that was a great SoundCloud. And I really enjoyed the poem. You know, it takes you to another place, another time in this fantastical, right? Mermaids are playing, snake belts are crawling, walking over the landscape like a giant. You know, just fascinating imagery and a wonderful tale. What did you think, Weaver?
Certainly was fantastical. I loved it. Sorry, I'm adjusting my headset. It's slipping down my head. I particularly loved mermaids are playing and snake belts are crawling. It was wonderful, walking over the landscape like a giant. I thought this was very cleverly, thoughtfully written. So much said in so few words and a beautiful accent to boot. Which, what can you say? What more would you ask for? But I like the chimney smokes like a chip on a sea of blue. I think, yes, it was very well done. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Lauren, what did you think?
No, my computer suddenly decided I'm not on the internet. So I heard it, but I can't really recall the text. I'll leave a comment as soon as I get back on the internet.
Okay, thank you, Lauren. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought this had wonderful imagery and metaphors in it. And, you know, a great personification also. And, very, very well written piece. You know, it takes us through so many different stories here. You can imagine so many different, you know, as I looked out from the tower, you know, which tower? You know, it can be, you know, the many towers here. So great, right? And just like I think Kate said, it takes you on a journey. It's enchanting, you know, and it makes you think further. I don't know. I can't really explain it, but it makes me think beyond the write itself. It takes my mind elsewhere. Just makes me ponder. I'm still analyzing this. So great write, Lila.
Thank you, Naomi. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have A Rose Forbidden by Passion's Promise. And I will read this. Whilst I'm guessing it's up, here we are. Here we have it. A Rose Forbidden. White lace top low cut to the navel. Soft, creamy breath bulging nicely between the warm material. Rose-colored buttons protruding, excitement rising upon sweet flesh. Fingertips sliding, inviting thoughts to enter. Black knit skirt, lovely long legs, mound just barely covered, sweet scent escaping as legs slowly part. His manhood lengthens, his eyes traveling, north, then south. Final destination, our blooming garden. Hunger striking, he's ready to feed. On his knees he falls, our dainty fingers escorting his own for tender plucking. Pink petals parting, the golden buds throbbing. Leaning in, he squeezes soft whispers, then a more heated moan with every tug. Spreading the petals wider, his mouth watering, as his tongue teases, his lips wanting to indulge. Leaning back, completely exposing the garden, his tongue flicks the bud, making short movements in a sweet circular motion to her garden's entryway. Lovely sense of excitement as tongue and fingers play, sliding deep within, bringing passion alive in an old bloom. Dew drips from center out, her petals nicely wet, his mouth drinks it all, bringing sweet pleasure to a forbidden rose. End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And I like the poem. You know, it's very descriptive and engaging throughout. It has a passion and a sensuality woven within these beautiful lines. Pink petals parting, the golden bud throbbing. Leaning in, he squeezes. Soft whisper, then a more heated moan with every tug. Yeah, just a fabulous write. You know, it's very metaphoric and powerfully penned. Beautiful job, Passions. And what did you think, Lord?
Oh, it's sensual and delectable. It seems to be an exercise in euphemisms and metaphors for sex, obviously. He does a very skillful job at it. I was reading this and thought of a rose never entered my mind once. It was that vivid in my mind. Let's put it that way. Nice piece.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, Passion's Promise. She's quite the sensual writer, indeed. That rose is not a rose, guys. It's not a rose. it may have petals, but and a bud, but he's in some kind of other garden there. yeah.
It's called the Garden of Upside Down Women.
Yeah, indeed. What a great central right here, you know. And I love the descriptions in the beginning. You can't, you know, take them away from the right, you know, the white lace top, low cut at the navel, the rose-colored bottoms, rose-colored buttons protruding, excitement rising upon sweet flesh, fingertips sliding, inviting thoughts to enter. The softness of the warm material, everything that leads into the right, and then of course the right itself, and all the like Laras. Like Lara said, you know, when you don't think of the rose, but you know, it is an excellent metaphor, and there's excellent metaphors used throughout. So beautiful, right? Wonderful, sensual, very erotic, right? And very passionate, to say the least. Bravo, Passions.
Thank you, Naomi. And Weaver, you read it. What did you think?
Metaphorically speaking, wowzer. Very, very sensual. And I enjoyed reading it. Although I am still blushing. And I'm like, don't worry about that. At my age, it happens. It was wonderful. I just loved it. It was just one of those. I was waiting to see what was going to happen, and I'm reading it. You know, you can't really skip ahead, can you? Beautifully done, Passion Promise. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was delicate. It's only what I can think of. Delicate sensuality. Is that possible? Yeah, I suppose it is. Everything's possible. Yes, I thought it was wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing.
It's the best kind of sensuality. It's the best kind of sensuality. Delicate.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
You've got to have the delicate. You've got to be there.
Delicate. Watch out for thorns.
Yeah. Oh, you can have a few thorns throughout. Of course.
Of course, yes. Pain and pleasure. Always a wonderful combination. All the peas, pain, pleasure. Okay. And what's next? Have we lost? Have we lost Gray? Gray?
Well, I'm here.
Oh,
so what do we have next, Weaver?
Thank you. I was waiting for you to say that, you see. Yeah. Southern Accents by Dan Ellison. And Gray, would you read this for us, please?
Sure. The South is where I call home, but from my accent, you'd never tell. I've been called Yankee most of my life. Proof, they don't know me so well. I cut baby teeth on crawdad meat, slipped into the eyes of hurricane, walked on four blocks to Bon Ecole, but would wade back in the rain. We wore sweaty T-shirts year-round with a trip case, marched Mardi Gras. I doubt that they do still that these days, but I will never forget what I saw. It was as far south as you can possibly go, barring out the west, Puerto Rico, and Keys. I grew with houses that rose on stilts, over stilt water blown by delta breeze. I sprouted it up with sugar cane. We glazed on our vibrant king cakes. Dinosaurs dwell those brackish swamps among cottonmouth and coral snake. I thrived there like the Spanish moth, with a cattail and the crazy kudzu, with a mosquito that still reigns supreme over the hauntingly beautiful bayou. There, the dead sleep above ground, while living prey to Lady Laveau's ghost. Next to exports of that funky jazz sound lies the pumped-out oil derrick ghost Gold Coast. I know how to spell Mississippi, all humpbacked and crooked letters. Use tin can bait, and it worked great against fish that don't know no better. I ask, who dat about them saints? Tipped many a street corner performer. Ate the freshest bread to ever have baked or wafted down that famous French quarter. So no, I'm not some Yankee. Hush, chill. Well, now, shoo. But when they don't speak like me either, I have to fire right back. You ain't some Yank, are you? End poem.
Bravo.
Yeah. Thank you. But that was an interesting write, you know. I really liked it. You know, he speaks to his origins, and that's south. And it's probably as far south as you can go, bearing up Puerto Rico and the Keys. I grew up with houses that rose on stilts over stilt-blown water by Delta Breeze. You know, it's got amazing imagery, and you can feel the sentiment of his language in this. And I thought it was interesting, and his author's note is huge. It's as long as the poem or longer, so I'm not going to read it, but you know, it says in the first lines, it says, everything in this is true, but of course I'm limiting geography to the U.S. alone. Yes, Puerto Rico is U.S. Sor Hawaii, I couldn't fit you in. And you know, he says alligators and crocs haven't changed much since the dinosaur days, so that's his reference to the dinosaurs in the swamp. And I really enjoyed it. You know, it was very visceral, deeply engaging, and a powerful write on the subject of his accent and where he's from. So he ain't no damn Yankee, that's for sure. And, yeah, beautifully written, powerful read. Well done, Dan. Katie, what did you think?
Oh, yes. This gave me so much insight. I mean, obviously, because I don't know much about America, do I? Because I'm one of them ignorant Brits, but I thought it was wonderful. I particularly liked we wore sweaty t-shirts year-round where the strips case marked Mardi Gras. I doubt they do it still these days, but I will never forget what I saw. And he says in his ear, and he actually saw them walking right through a march, all dressed up in their gear. That must have been so scary. Yeah, he said it didn't cause much trouble most of the time, but it was just horrible to see. So yes, I thought it was beautifully done. So I can hardly talk. I do apologize. But yes, lovely. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Dan.
Great comment. Thank you. And Laurent, what did you think?
Are you on mute, Laurent?
Evidently. Evidently.
Not at all. You're just very quiet.
Yeah, oh, you know, absolutely. It was nice to be introduced to Graz Smith from Louisiana Bayou Country. Nice voice there, my young man.
Thank you.
You know, this does smack of Louisiana. It's an amazing state. And as the AN states, it got a very ugly side. There are places you do not want to go if you have anything but a Louisiana accent. God forbid New York. You may not leave. Very parochial, very jealous of their privacy in many ways. The archetypal, you the tax man, you're going to get shot. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, I love this trip down south. You know, I just love the stanza. I know how to spell Mississippi. All humpback and crooked letters. Use tin can bait and work great against fish that don't know no better. I can't do your accent as good as you. They're great. That was really amazing, right? But, you know, I just love that, you know, reference to Mississippi, all humpback and crooked letters. Yeah, it's quite a state to spell indeed. And then, you know, yeah, like Laura said, you know, you have to watch out in those parts for sure. And, you know, he does reference it to it, you know, hey, you ain't some yank, are you? In the end there. So awesomely well written all through. Wonderful imagery and, you know, wonderful references that, you know, teach us about the land a lot and what's down there. So great, great write.
Thank you, Naomi. All right, Katie, what do we have next?
Well, I have a life lesson for you. Do not try to drink a fresh can of Coca-Cola with a straw, because you'll get yourself completely sick to choke. It was awful. What a fright I got. It went everywhere. Flipping heck. Okay, we have Black Plague Mass Anthem by the punk poet 007? I don't know. Now, Laurent, could you read this for us, please?
All right. Black Plague Mass Anthem. We are the poets, weirdos, and artists. We plant visions inside the harvest. Never fitting in, we're called outcasts. Together we walk solid in goth mask. Yes, we wear black deep inside. Cast your stones, we'll never hide. Brothers and sisters alike to form union. Strange is beautiful. It's our fusion. We will not falter. And we will not fall. The Black Plague Mass, hear us all. Hear us call. Our bond will not be tested or broken. Under your flesh, our meaning awoken. Stab us in our backs. We will not die. Taste the tears we placed in your eyes. All we really need is love for peace. We won't cover up in sheep's fleece. Mouths that speak beauty in all colors. We are not fighters. We are lovers. Tolling bells to announce freedom. This, our Black Plague Mass Anthem. Don't have fear. This is the beginning. A new realm of everyone winning. We have drive to erase the demons. We'll spill their veins of all the venom. Let's all gather hands to unite as one. Every life matters that's under the sun. We are the weirdos, poets, and artists. Walk this way into lives with catharsis. And
beautiful read, Lauren. And that was a fascinating poem. I really like it. You know, it speaks like the rebels and the outcasts gather hands and walk together in a solid goth mass. Stab us in our backs. We will not die. Taste the tears we placed in your eyes. All we really need is love for peace. We won't cover up in sheep's fleece. You know, we won't be part of your crowd. And we will never fit in because we are the artists and the poets. So, just a wonderful write. I like the stance that it has in it. Beautifully done. What did you think, Weaver?
I thought it was great. Such a license they took. I loved it. Of course, that last stanza, could we call that last stanza? The punk poet. Always be punk, always be drunk on poetry. Perfect. I thought it was jest. I thought it was an awful lot of feeling in this. I love the spelling. So good. It just makes it so different. You know, that's what I like, different. Don't falter. We will not fall. As a black plague matters, hear us all. Yes, in there, sorry. So yeah, I loved it the first time I heard it. I love it again. It was very good. Thank you so much for that.
Great comment. Thank you. Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, you know, this is a wonderful write. Kind of a dark write, too. We feel the darkness throughout it. But, the Black Plague mass anthem. Just embracing our singularity here, embracing who we are, and, you know, like you said, Gray not following the crowd, you know, sticking out for different, and just, embracing that, you know, celebrating, who we are, you know, that darkness within, because, you know, she says, we have drive to erase the demons. We'll spill their veins of all the venom. Let's all gather hands to unite as one. Every life matters that's under the sun. We are the weirdos, poets, and artists. Walk this way into lives of catharsis. This is this amazing write all the way through. Really enjoyed it. Thank you, punk poet. Thank you.
Thank you, Naomi. And Laurent, you read it. What did you think?
Very interesting piece. I like all what was said about it prior. We are the poets, weirdos, and artists. We plant visions inside the harvest. Those two lines are a good description of what we do, planting visions inside the harvest. It works for me. A little puzzled at the spelling on the two words, black and not. I mean, if you're going to have that kind of a play on words, I would expect a number of different words to be done, not just two all the way through. So I'm not going to second guess what he was doing, because it was a good poem.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. Okay, Weaver, where are we to next?
Next we have Christmas, Here We Go by Frank Clusterbuck. Love his handle. Love his handle. I'll read this one. I'm just being facetious. I do apologize. Right, Christmas, Here We Go. If I was to make a call, I'd be all over Maria Carey. You sing it, girl. That's what it's all about. Lucky lovers holding hands and longing for a home at every airport, holding on to whatever they can find. The world tumbled into ignorance and negation. I'll tell you what I believe. I believe in my grandson and my granddaughter. I think they'll find a way. The old time kings, they're all played out. The world will be a better place of redesign. End poem.
Great read. And I liked it. You know, the Christmas Here We Go is an interesting title. And then, you know, if I was to make a call, I'd be all over Mariah Carey. You sing it, girl. That's what it's all about. And then, you know, he goes on to two lovers who are holding on to whatever they can find, a world of ignorance and negation. And then I tell you what I believe. I believe my grandson and my granddaughter. I think they'll find a way. You know, he has faith in the younger generation being able to cope and deal with what they have to deal with. And absolutely. A wonderful write. Very intriguing. What did you think, Weaver?
Yes, I thought it was very well written. I like that. I like the stanza about grandson and granddaughter. That was very nice. That's, we all believe that our children are going to make a difference and our grandchildren are going to make a difference. I hope that they will. God bless. Yes, I really hope they will. But yes, I thought it was beautiful. I was a bit thrown by it. I'd be all over Mariah Carey because I couldn't say her name properly. But that was a beautiful way to start it, wasn't it? So yes, well thought out and beautifully written. And the world will be a better place. We'll all keep our fingers crossed for that. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Frank.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Laurent, what did you think?
Interesting. The line, the old-time kings, they're all played out. I looked at that for a moment, and I wondered aloud to myself if this was not a reference to these three kings of Orient are, kind of implying that religion no longer takes its rightful place at Christmas. It's more commercial, less about the birth of Jesus, and therefore trust has to be placed in a grandson and in a granddaughter to be wise enough to find a way. Auf Wiedersehen, ein Spieß.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Naomi, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, me too. I kind of stumbled at the, you know, the old time kings. I took it as the baby boomers. I wasn't happy. But, you know, could be what Laura just stated. But, of course, a wonderful written piece, you know, lucky lovers holding hands and longing for a home at every airport, holding on to whatever they can. The world tumbled in ignorance and negation. You know, it's so true, especially after, you know, COVID. I don't know what's happening to the world. But anyway, pass on that. I tell you what I believe. I believe in my grandson and my my granddaughter. You know, yeah, me too. You know, the grandchildren are so important. And, you know, the way we raise them, and you know, the way they will form their own identities and perhaps change the world to the best. Let's hope. So right here by Frank Westerbuck.
Great comment, Naomi. Thank you. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have A Christmas Memory. And this has got a SoundCloud with it. It's Xylophonic
okay,
Blues. Thank you.
Even.
Christmas memory. Velvet roses awaken unraveled in the attic, her eyes tinted. Through November's calico sun, spring's dandelion dust, summer's excitement, sugarcane fishing bolts. Over crystals under glass, pecans windfall of frosted scraps, eyes exacting. Tensilated, tallow burns wakened wick, float away colored night's candlelight, thundercaps collapse, desk turns apple jelly and peach preserves, a small word magnifies then slips back. Rusty pine burrs, scented briars catch at our clothes. Copper stacked in oil glows. Whiskey spoons and vanillas sweeten air. Moss drifts by the river's edge. Ginger puffs of chimney smoke. Burlap logs crumbling. Coldness of chicory thorns. Our steps slow down. Penny postcards amongst afternoon scrapbooks. Dust, muddy cloud. Hidden routes of rose-colored symmetry. I felt two hands in the evening air that won't stop. Palms trying for perfection of balance. Laughter trapped as mercury plummets. Irish picks up a pen, inked in blue daiquiri. This port of resilience has its own friction. Flapjacks, harmony glitz and honeycomb, cordially pulling me back. Blowing, running, plunging through hand-tied stems. Kites unreal, twitching at the string, discovering whisper's tone. Satan's cosmetic picture of hummingbirds. Faraway cherries, tingling, May buds, chill in July. Echoes carried on tides, full-blown sails, severing a kite's broken string. Light bends searching December's seafoam sky. Chimes awaiting the northbound train. Rivulet's pebbles floating through nostalgia's frame. Hands subtract pennies tossed in copper's windowpane. A nightingale sings an octave. Faith becomes an echo. Leather-bound gingerly. Blackberries picked in wooden bowls. Mirrors exposure of trees and light. Of paper tinged a warm hue. Memories upstream. Scenes shot in clouds, unconscious rain, a locket click emerged. Pensively edged leaflets, that's how it is in books. Interplay, impressionist splashed watercolors, that's how it is in childhood. Playful reserved, crayon parchments and books are like childhood. Movement rendered portraiture, flecked by a distant past. One is mine, another is yours. One stock canvas, plastered acrylic, yet another floats downstream. Rediscovery, wistfully, illustrative. Twilight descends, a miracle, the breath of a friend. Seeing you, end poem.
Wow, beautiful read. And it says in the author's notes, individual interpretation of Truman Capote, A Christmas Memory, abstract. Surreal to the quote. And, you know, he really did capture that quite beautifully. And it's a talented writer. You know, he has a way with his poetic verse that is kind of astounding, and it's deeply metaphorical and rich in its imagery as well. You know, it's full of sensory imagery and, you know, smell, sight, taste, sound. It's all there. And I thought it was a wonderful poem. What did you think, Weaver?
Definitely a wonderful interpretation. By blimey, that was surreal. I did enjoy it. I liked his read. I think I particularly like Twilight Descends a Miracle, The Breath of a Friend, Seeing You. Oh, that is lovely. It really is. Some of my friends I'd love to see again. It's just beautifully thought and beautifully written, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Lauren, what did you think?
Well, it's filled with snippets of memory, building a world that's really designed to offer imagery that triggers an emotion of some kind, which he does very skillfully. I haven't read the original by Truman Capote, so I really don't have a context for comparison. But as a standalone piece, it does very well because there's a beauty in this language. Blackberries picked in wooden bowls. Mirrors exposure of press and light of paper tinged a warm hue. Memories upstream, scenes shot in clouds, unconscious rain, a solemn click of a locket. Just those little bursts of imagery wrought together into a beautiful piece.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Naomi, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Laura picked out the exact lines that I was going to read out. But, you know, this is but wonderful all the way through. It's just like, you know, like you said, little pieces, bits and pieces put together of this nostalgia, you know, of Christmas when you're young, Christmas as a child, you know, when you come together. And all these beautiful, like you said, Laurent, you know, the scents, the sounds, all the senses here are aroused in this nostalgic piece, and so well written. Bravo.
Thank you, Naomi. Okay, Weaver, where are we to next?
Sorry. Next we have The Underworld's Revenge by S. Sharp. And this also has a SoundCloud. Ray.
Okay. I will play that.
Thank you.
No problem.
The Underworld's Revenge. Let blood boil beneath Ekron. Subterranean rivers surface in distant scriptures. Where seven princes carried in the papyrus, the lantern of light, gather in the fire and brimstone, eternal darkness brought into the light from the emptiness of Abaddon near Sheol. Along the underworld caverns where molten times harden like steel and resolve, cracks form in the body of the earth, rumblings throughout history underneath it all, escape, steam blasts from every pore on her face. Do not tell me of eschatology, simply wrap the universe up and into itself like a sock rolled inside out, and let it erupt, spew its venom, like the vomit of an ill child.
Well, that was an interesting write. You know, it speaks to language and time that I have no clue about. And I really enjoyed the imagery that was presented here. Steam blasts from every pore on her face. Do not tell me of eschatology. Simply wrap the earth up into itself, like a sock rolled inside out, and let it erupt, spew its venom, like the vomit of an ill child. Wow. And the seven princes referred to in this text are Lucifer, pride; Beelzebub, envy; Satan, wrath; Abaddon, sloth; Mammon, greed; Belphegor, gluttony; and Asmodeus, lust. Wow. That was an imagery filled, right? And, you know, it's... you really needed the author's notes to understand what was written, and I thought he did a beautiful job of presenting this poem. What did you think, Weaver?
Oh, I thought this was absolutely brilliant. I really did. It's the beauty of the lexicon he used. It is amazing. It just, as you say, it's not words that we would come across that often. The seven deadly sins. We know the seven deadly sins, but I haven't ever thought of them as connected to particular demons or deities or whatever you'd like to call them. I wouldn't call them princes, but yeah, terrible. And I didn't realize, well, yeah, Lucifer and pride. That kind of does make you think it would happen, wouldn't it? And Beelzebub and envy, yeah, I suppose. It's great to have a moniker to hang them on, you know, where you just think of all the different sins and you never give it a thought other than that. But yes, I thought it was so interesting. And I've learned something new again, which I always love. I'll forget it by tomorrow, but I like the fact that I've learned something. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I enjoyed it very much.
Excellent comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Laurent, what did you think?
Some poems stand alone as poetry. Others educate you as well. And this one does. I thought it was so interesting to learn about the seven princes, the lantern of light. Lovely use of the word eschatology. And it's this manipulates emotions as well. They're not telling me of eschatology. Simply wrap the earth up and into itself like a sock rolled inside out. Well, that struck me as being very clever, very evocative as well, because we all know what a pair of socks rolled inside out look like. Well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Laurent. And Naomi, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of research went into this, right, by Scott here. You know, he put a lot of effort into it. Wonderful, right? You know, I didn't know that, you know, those seven deadly sins were indeed seven princes of hell, which he names there. That's great to know, you know, and great to use in future poems. you know, those names. But, you know, the amazing, you know, flow throughout this, very, very powerful and, you know, a fierce right on, you know, what would really happen if, you know, all those, well, of course, we do know them, but what if they just, like he says, you know, they blast out, you know, you know, from the underworld, and you know, everybody is overtaken. Well, I guess in a way, sometimes we are, but you know, just a wonderful, thought provoking, right? Too, in a way, and you know, I just love the fierceness in it and the powerfulness. So well done, Scott, indeed.
Excellent comment, Naomi. Thank you. And I'd like to welcome Frank, a.k.a. Poetic Picasso, to the show. Hello, Frank.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Yes.
Hi, Frank. I do apologize. Hello there, Naomi. I do apologize for being late there.
That's okay.
That's
did
all
you,
right.
Did you get to hear the poem?
No, but I was able to read the poem there, pretty much the gist of the poem. I do agree, I was listening to the comment there made by Naomi. I like the mystical aspect to this poem here. There is mention there of Abaddon and Sheol, which I've actually written using these two words before, priorly in poetry. I've written before. It's just a powerful poem. It has mythology, elements of mythology, but it also has deep resonance for me as well, because it talks about just the whole notion of what, you know, what the underworld could be, you know, the mystery of the underworld. You know, we talk about hell, we talk about heaven, but we wonder at times, we ponder about these things, and he did a fantastic job of allowing us to just... perceive to a certain extent, you know, visually through his metaphors, what this could be like, you know, in a poetic sense, of course. That is a fantastic job.
Great comment, Frank. Thank you. Okay, Weaver, yeah. So I guess we're heading into open poetry now.
Yes, we are. And I'll be there as quickly as I can. Bear with me. I went a little bit too fast and lost everything. Oh, my goodness me. Just talk amongst yourselves. I'll be there in a moment. I've got past context. Open poetry. Ah, ta-da! My, this is an adventure. I'm all over the place. Okay, we're ready to go. And next we have his master's voice. Laurent, would you care to read your poem for us? Are you on mute?
I'll be happy to. No. Just trying to find this. Not seeing the.
I don't see
my
the
computer's
link.
Been wonky all night. I'm just not seeing the link.
No, it's not in the group yet.
Sorry, man.
I'll post it. Okay, here we go. All right,
yeah.
There you go.
All right, thank you. His master's voice. I used to scrawl my troops in pencil or in pen. The lead broke off, my ink ran out, frustrated once again. Sharpener was always hiding, and who keeps a refill handy? In the ensuing search, nothing to mean or besmirch, I found a new modus operandi. A mini recorder with taste of its own, it captured my voice. It was a far wiser choice, as Apple was years from their throne. I prattled on daily, though thought was neglected, but too much use was battery abuse. My truths proved again uncollected. Then Jobs released his computer, an electronic marvel for sure. He tapped on the keys, transcribed words with ease, as described in the Sever's brochure. It cost a small fortune, little much to afford. Scrimping and saving, I even stopped shaving. No economy was ever ignored. Acquisition day finally arrived. I read the manual again and again. It proved too complex. My nerves were a wreck, and so returned to pencil and pen. Life's flavor the thing. Ignore the brass ring. Keep your operations simple. Years passed, and tech has improved. Mentation now stored on my Kindle. End poem.
Well, beautifully written and an excellent read, Mark. I enjoyed it thoroughly. You know, you go from pencil and pen, the lead breaks off, and your ink runs out, and the sharpener's not handy. And then a mini recorder where the batteries die. He prattled on daily, no thought was neglected, but too much use, 'twas battery abuse. My truth proved, again, uncollected. And then finally, Jobs released his computer. It cost a small fortune, and it proved too complex. Your nerves were a wreck, and so you returned to pencil and pen. And then I really liked the last stanza. Life's flavor, the thing, ignore the brass ring. Keep your operations simple. Years passed and tech has improved. Mentation now stored on my Kindle. Beautifully written and a fantastic read, Laurent. Excellent job. Weaver, what did you think?
Thanks, Gray.
Oh, that was wonderful. That was his master's voice, by golly. I really enjoyed it. I loved the touch of levity. Really, really worked. It really did. And I can imagine. You can imagine, can't you? Pen and pencil, lead breaking, ink running out, and then a mini recorder. Oh my, so cool! And yeah, battery abuse. I like it, but yeah, I thought it was very, very good, and I really loved the way you read it. But I like the second to last stanza. As usually with me, it's the last one. But acquisition day finally arrived. I read the manual again and again. It proved too complex. My nerves were wrecked. And so return to pencil and pen. Ah, lovely. It feels like you're coming home. Yes, I loved it. Thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you.
Great comment. Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Naomi, what did you think?
I thought this was very, really funny. You know, the way you take us down through all those technologies. I wondered about those recorders that tape your voice as you read, you know. I want to get one of those. But, you know, then do you lose all your data if the battery goes, you know? That's something to think about there. And, you know, of course, yeah, you know, as technology grows, you know, from one computer to another, you know, it costs a small fortune to keep up. And, you know, I just love your last thought, you know, that you go back to the pen and pencil at the end because, you know, why, you know, complicate your life when practical, simple things can do. And, you know, that's a great metaphor for anything in life, you know. Just keep it simple. Keep it simple and keep yourself sane.
Yeah.
So, wonderful, wonderful, right, Laura?
Thank you.
Great comment, thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
You know, this poem is like, it chronicles really the progression of technology. I can recall my first recording on a tape recorder. I was very young. That's how I began my acting career. And really, just the whole notion of what technology was back then and what it is now. I even began writing. My first adventures of writing were writing on a pencil. So it took me to those memories there, Laurent. But you did a fantastic job. You know, I think the simplicity, I agree with Naomi, the simplicity of writing at times is more complex because we make it more complex. And sometimes, you know, the simplicity of writing can be anything, whether it's through a pin, whether it's through a pencil, or whether it's through a phone. I have to admit, I do a lot of my writing on a mobile phone, but it does get to the point where it becomes tedious. So either way, we either adapt or we get left behind. But to a certain extent, as a poet and as a writer, we always have technology there, good or bad, to utilize. And I think you did a fantastic job of just describing in your poem here, you know, the whole notion of what technology is and what it was back then. So it's a very good poem. It really gave me a good thought tonight on this.
Thank you, Frank. I should have included the manual. I should have included the manual typewriter. Because the other day,
I pulled
an old manual typewriter in Olympus out of its case. I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah.
And I said, I wonder what it's like to write with this. So I started writing with it, and I immediately remembered what a pain in the ass writing with a typewriter is. White out, mistakes, XXX, you know, and by the time you're done, there's a joke, it doesn't look like anything.
You have a lot of ink as well.
And the ribbon goes all crooked.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
I can remember
and
that in
the
style. Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, click, click, click.
Yeah, the noise.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, my
like
gracious world.
Yeah. Would you like to say anything about your poem?
It really just began as an experiment in rhyming that first stanza. When I say I used to scrawl my truths in pencil or in pen, it just sounded like the first line of something. So I just continued on that thought, and it evolved. I had no idea it was going to be this long. I apologize for that. Working the moment, so to speak.
Great comment. Thank you, Mark. Okay, Weaver, where are we next?
Next we have This Body Is Yours by Hope So. And Naomi, would you read this for us, please?
Yeah. This body is yours. Coronal pumps of a heart, rushing blood to strong lungs, out and in, lifting upwards to ripe and passion fruits. Open the rind, exposing Mexicana's colorful, juicy flesh seeds. You occupy this body. Plumping pinks, full feminine lips, pouty pucker swoons. Expose the cannons, nibble every inch of heat that reddens soft pillow cheeks. This body is yours to occupy. Chamomile hands, rein in pink, white, acrylic nails, finger painting, milky white, broad shoulders, palms filled with afro curls, muffling, pleas, and ribs, to occupus, este, red, lace, hip huggers, wrapped around the honeycomb. Slipping off, revealing sweet liquor, nectar. Vese acta este corpo. end poem.
Wow, beautiful read. And I really enjoyed the poem. You know, it. I think that's probably one of Nuno's paintings up there. And, you know, she captures the essence of it beautifully. And carnal pumps of a heart, rushing blood to strong lungs, out and in, lifting outwards two ripened passion fruits. Open the rind, expose Mexicana's colorful, juicy flesh seeds. You occupy this body. Yeah. Just a powerful rite, metaphorically rich and deeply penned. What did you think, Weaver?
Sorry, I'm on mute. I do apologize. Oh, yes, that is a beautiful picture. And it does make you think about a heart, doesn't it? Yes, I thought this was beautifully written. I like the alliteration. Plumping pinks, full feminine lips, pouty pucker swoons, exposes the canines, nibble every inch of heat that reddened soft pillow cheeks. Yes, that was really beautifully written. And thank you very much for sharing that with us, Hope.
Absolutely, thank you. And Laurent, what did you think?
I think this poem is somewhat reminiscent of one we read two or three poems ago that was euphemistically and metaphorically rich. Carnal pumps of a heart, rushing blood to strong lungs, out and in, lifting, heaving outwards, two ripened passion fruits, open the rind, close Mexicanas, colorful, juicy flesh seeds, lap up the taste, you occupy this body. Oh, if only I could. Great piece.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, I really liked this piece. You know, I think she really captured the prompt wonderfully in her words. You know, great metaphors, beautiful lines. You know, this body is yours. You know, that in itself is a great, you know, line, you know, and you occupy this body. And what a great painting that is. Wow, I really love that. You know, the swirling, the abstract nature of it. You know, I'd see that in my house. Wonderful, wonderful painting. And but you know, wonderful right here by Hope, you know, for sure. You know, she really you know, does that art justice for sure. Great right, Hope.
Great comment, Naomi, thank you. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
You know, I'm coming more accustomed to the poetry and the paintings as well by Nuno. This is a wonderful inspirational piece here. It's very sensual, but it's also very beautiful. I like the whole notion there of the body itself being offered here. You know, the notion of what when one offers their soul, a body in particular. It's not something that it's given, you know, so easily. It's something that one has to earn. And I'm just really stunned by these metaphors. She really has a way of implementing metaphors to such an exquisite way that it really, really touched me here. And chamomile, I had chamomile tea before I came on board. So this is a wonderful reverential poem here, and it's delightful, and I like the mention as well to end up here with the Portuguese and the Spanish as well. It's obviously a connection there, and it's really very, very well written, I thought.
Great comment, thank you.
And it's her painting, yeah.
She painted that
oh, no,
for,
it's his. Is it his or hers?
For the right.
It's hers.
Oh, it's hers.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I had no idea. What a beautiful, beautiful painting it is.
Absolutely. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have Your Petaled Lips by Poetic Pic- Castle, and there is a SoundCloud. Shall we play that?
You bet. Okay, here we go.
If I could smell now the alluring scent of your white, waxy jasmine, I would be imbued by its perfumed scent, with the caress of its fresh petals, listen to the dulcet tone of the gentle breeze of the evening tide blows, remember when our love was the colour of the morning twilight. We were two turtle doves, a part of the orchestra of the sweet hymns of the spring tide. Our hearts were the beat of the rhythm of the musical strings of a blissful cello, a mouth drained from the cascade of the river of the valley of poppies. Our bodies danced upon the steady waves of the sea. Every word you uttered was the sound of a mellifluous harmony. Every day with you was a semblance of the afternoon sunshine I miss. Every night was a refulgence of the starry universe. Every raindrop was the matinal dew of a memory to cherish. The sky was a celestial breath that our wings rode upon as cherubs of Cupid. Love is the nectar from your petaled lips. I taste in my dreams the elixir I consume and the ambrosia feeding my soul. I sing the songs that serenade your sparkling eyes anew, when I know that you can hear the echo of my voice. If you were to whisper like the waxy white jasmine in the winter, release your special scent, and I would be alone in the labyrinth of time without your love. I would be alone in the labyrinth of time without your love.
Wow, beautiful read, Frank. And that was filled with stunning imagery and metaphor. You know, it was so rich in love and devotion. And, you know, you can feel the heartache in the thought that, you know, if she was to wither away like the waxy white jasmine in winter and lose her special scent, then he would be alone in the labyrinth of time without her love. So just a beautiful poem, very romantic and deeply engaging throughout. What did you think, Weaver?
I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Sorry, was that me you were speaking to, yes?
Yes.
Sorry. yeah, I thought, as usual, this is a sweet, sweet ode to love. I thought, we were two turtle doves, a part of the orchestra of the sweet hymns of springtide. I thought this was just so, so sweet. A touch of sensual, but romantic, which is so nice to hear. Anybody would love that to be read to them. Frank, it was beautiful. I'm so busy reading it as I'm going along here, because every part of this is just so, so lovely. If you were to wither like the waxy white jasmine in the winter, lose your special scent, then I would be alone in the labyrinth of time without your love. Oh, it's beautiful. Oh, so sweet. Yes, I love this. I think this is just a lovely change for you, which is always good to have. Red.
I do have my romantic side there.
Oh, I know you do. I know this is more romantic. I like the romantic. Yeah. This is even more romantic, which I do love. I'm a sucker at heart.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Ben. And if I can say quickly, this was inspired by a quote here from a contest here. So if you scroll down, you can see what inspired this poem as well.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's lovely. That is a lovely quote.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, beautifully done. Thank you so much.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. Lawrence, what are your thoughts?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I got dropped, I wasn't sure if I was on mute or not. This piece is the phrasing and the imagery is what really struck me here. And it is a little subdued, perhaps, in terms of what Frank normally writes. But I guess if you're trying to write like Rumi, which he successfully did, it fits it perfectly. That stanza, we were two turtle doves, a part of the orchestra of the sweet hymns of the springtide, I thought was particularly striking, the sweet hymns of the springtide. I hadn't thought about spring like that as a hymn. But if you take it, if you take every sound in concert, it does become a hymn, really a pan to nature, to the tide, to the spring tide, to the time of year. It's a lovely, lovely piece, Frank.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir.
Great comment. Thank you, Lauren. And Frank, would you like to say anything about your piece?
Oh. And then Naomi go or what?
Sorry, Naomi.
No, it's all right.
Naomi, what did you think?
This is amazing, Frank. You know, this is an ode to love itself. It's just beautiful. Where is the part there that I really, just wait a minute. Okay, Laurent stated the turtle love's a part of the orchestra of the sweet hymns of the spring tide, which I found beautiful, but also the rest of it, our hearts were the beat of the rhythm of the musical strings of a blissful cello, our mouths drank from the cascade of the river of the valley of poppies. Our bodies dance upon the steady waves of the sea. And, your use of nature throughout it is just, beautiful, beautiful. And your reference to, of course, musicality. I think you touch all of our senses throughout this poem. Beautiful imagery, beautiful flow, and just a wonderful, stunning right here, Frank.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And would you like to say anything about your poem, Frank?
I'll be brief. It was a poem that was inspired here from a contest there by Osama. And Rumi's, I've done several, it's been a while since I've not done one of these contests, but when I've done, I've been inspired by digging deep down in my soul, I guess, and using metaphors as well. They come natural in this time, and I'm really deep into thought. And this is what inspired me for this poem here, and I took the aspect of pain and love and everything that comes with it. And why not use a Rumi quote to inspire you?
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you for sharing, Frank. Okay, I believe we have one from Nuno, and then it's back to... Oh, no. We have Naomi Sarah. Okay. Naomi, you're up next, please.
Yes, just getting back to the board here. Refresh.
Yeah,
okay, this was written to the to the contest, actually, the Eleanor Roosevelt prompt, if life were predictable, it would cease to be life and would be without flavor. So this is a trip and a tumble. Amy skipped out, singing from the ice cream parlor, gripping in her tiny hand a sugary cone piled high in three creamy white scoops, dripping in a hot, sticky caramel, crunching down on crisp pecans, roasted in melted salted butter, mingled in a sweet vanilla malt. Her mouth swooned and hummed, all taste buds tickling and tingling with every yummy lick and bite, as she danced in a douce reverie of oozing sumptuous flavors. Doug, the neighborhood dog walker, came sauntering down the street. And whoops! Across the sidewalk sailed a slush, a salty sweet vanilla pecan deluxe, under the noses of five furry balls as Amy went splat down in the middle of slurping tongues and wagging tails. Hugging and petting every drooly puppy, she laughed at how a trip and a tumble had burst into bubbles of gigantic giggles and a mile-wide smile across her cheeks. End poem.
Well, beautiful read, Naomi. And I love the storyline to this. You know, you got a little girl who's getting ice cream and, you know, enjoying it, and she danced a dulce reverie of oozing sumptuous flavors. Doug, the neighborhood dog walker, came sauntering down the street, and oops, across the sidewalk sailed a slush, a salty sweet vanilla pecan deluxe, under the noses of five furry balls. And then she gets down on the ground with them and hugs them and licks them, I mean, lets them kiss her and stuff. So I thought it was just a beautiful image filled, right, very engaging and fantastically received. What did you think, Weaver?
Yes, I thought this was absolutely lovely. How sweet. I mean, we don't have ice cream parlors here, anything like you have. So I would love to visit one of those. They look so interesting. They have those funny seats that you can sit on that I can't reach. Crunching down on... I know. It's a horror. I need a rope to get me up to those things. Crouching down on crisp pecans, roasted in melted salted butter, mingled in sweet vanilla. Oh, my goodness, I want an ice cream. Oh, I want my mouth to swoon. So well written. It really is beautifully written. I love it. And oops, across the sidewalk, field of slush. Yes, I wasn't quite finished. Yes, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was beautifully done. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Weaver. And, Lauren, what did you think?
I really like the poem. Unfortunately, most of what Naomi was reading was breaking up for me. I could scarcely hear any of it. But the little bit that I heard told me that she was using the exact tone that you should in something like this. You know, playfully, a little thing, reading the words. I'm glad that you chose a happy ending and that she'd laughed at how a trip and a tumble had burst into bubbles of gigantic giggles and a mile-wide smile across her cheeks. Because I've seen more than a few videos of children losing their vanilla ice cream or other ice cream to little puppies, and they weren't that happy about it. As a matter of fact, they made their displeasure very, very loud. So I'd like to point of you. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And, Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, just the whole notion of what has been described here really just takes any one of us down memory lane. You know, we can recall in our neighborhoods there, we can recall a moment like this perhaps. And it's a poem that's, the narrative itself was just a great narrative. And I like the way you just, gave us the details there about, you know, what went on. It started building up, and then, of course, it ends with the dance of the douce cleverie, and I like that. I like your metaphors there, the sumptuous flavors. And, you know, I think when we, you know, we think about something like this, you know, how it sounds so, you know, so we don't think about these memories here. We don't think about these things that happen. But things like this do happen daily. And when they do, you know, they make us smile because we have hope, you know. We have hope that that we can smile and laugh, you know, despite a tumble or fall here. So I think Naomi did a fantastic job of bringing us this narrative in Yes, ice cream. I don't know about you, weaver parlors out there, I know, but perhaps there's a lorry that passes there around your neighborhood that can shovel some ice cream to you.
Oh, that would be lovely.
There you go.
You never get ice cream when you want it. But thank you for the thought.
There you go.
Thank you, Frank.
Great comment. And would you like to say about your poem, Naomi?
No, well, you know, I just wanted to take the prompt and, you know, the unpredictable, how it can, you know, bring out something more flavorful in life than just ice cream. You know, it could bring out bubbles of giggling laughter and smiles. You know, that unpredictable trip and tumble, you know, the metaphor for, you know, the trips and tumbles that you can take in life that are unpredictable and that can bring you happiness in the end and kinds of flavors. So, you know, that was the basis of the poem.
Thank you, Naomi. Thank you for sharing. Okay, Weaver, did you get my message?
Yes, I did. It's here. Okay. Love is like a dog from hell by Nunu Cardusu. And would you like to read this?
Sure. Love is like a dog from hell by Nunu Cardusu. I just got up from sitting on my ass for too long. My right foot and whole leg are numb, and I'm limping towards the bathroom like I'm wearing clown shoes. Oh, so you're laughing at my numbness and pain. You can be cruel. No, you're not cruel. You're just like a dog from hell. End poem. And he says in his author's notes, title is a reference from one of Bukowski's books. The story is a real one. Wow. Yeah, you know, some lovers can be cruel, but, you know, I think they find humor in the suffering of others. And, you know, it can be quite humorous when somebody's limping towards the bathroom after sitting on their ass for too long. And, you know, I liked Hope's comment. She says, this made me giggle, but I laughed harder at your limp, Mia Moore, brilliant as always. And then he says, thank you, my dog from hell. So wonderful, right? And very engaging throughout. What did you think, Weaver?
Yes, I thought this was beautifully written. I really enjoyed it. It's happened to us all, hasn't it? When you get up and your leg's gone. Oh, it's a horrible feeling. Oh, it really is. I don't know if anybody would know. You wouldn't know because you're all too young. But they used to have great, big, enormous wooden toilet seats. And I'm a titchy person. And I got off one of those and both my legs were numb. It was awful. So I can see why you would write about it, because it's funny when you have to, when you don't have it and somebody else does and they're trying to get to the toilet. I thought it was beautifully written. I really enjoyed that. Thank you so much.
All right, absolutely. Thank you. And I'm going to see if Warren is back yet. No, he's not. Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, well, I laughed the whole thing, you know. This is just a fun little write. It's so delightful. And, you know, the comment that you mentioned between the two, Hope and Nuno there, wonderful too, you know, to add that in. But, you know, this has just made me giggle all the way through. And you can be cruel. No, you're not cruel. You're just like a dog from hell. But you picture this whole scene going through as you read it, you know. So wonderfully well written.
Great comment, Naomi. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, the poem itself, you know, has a seriousness to it. You know, we can look at it and think it's comical, but it does have a serious attachment to the poem. I myself have had this experience before on stage. I'm not going to get into the details, but it is not one that's a pretty sight. But you have to move on. I like the fact that he's able to, you know, he plays with the poem, and although it seems that he asked the question, you could be cruel, there's this admission here of you know, accepting this, and although it's a personal experience, he's able to write in a bit of humor and use that experience for this poem. So in that regard, I do like that he's able to, you know, bring his wit out, you know, amidst the adversity of an experience like this, you know, which we've all gone through, I imagine. Great poem.
Great comment. Thank you. And I'm going to check the studio one more time for Laurent. Okay, no Laurent. So what do we have next, Kate?
Next we have Free Will by Gypsyland. And Naomi, could I ask you to read this, please? My voice is going.
Yeah, I'm going to try. My computer's going high wire on me here. Okay, yeah, I just got it. Yeah, okay, Gypsy line. Free will. Life is unpredictable because of free will. Our own actions can keep peace from being still. If life were predictable, you would have to do someone's every whim, and a robot we would be to them. We could not do things on the spur of the moment, and to count would never be that last cent. We would know the time of our death, and torment would be our last breath. No excitement would be there, and life would always be fair. Knowing would take away the fun, and who would be whose chum. End poem.
Beautiful read. And I like the poem. You know, it really speaks to life having variety and being a robot without it. And, you know, we would know the time of our death, and torment would be our last breath. You know, just a fabulous write on the prompt. So beautifully done. Weaver, what did you think?
Oh, yes. I like the title, Free Will. It's a great title. Yes, I could see that. If you got to know too much about what was happening to you, it would actually probably make you terrified and struck dumb by the thought of you would know when you were going to die and what of, and oh, no, would not be good. So I think that's beautifully put. There would be no excitement. And life would always be fair. Well, that would be good. Knowing would take away the fun, and who would be whose chum. Yes, I thought it was very clever. I liked it a lot. It's a thought that hadn't crossed my mind for a while. But, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that, Gypsy. It was beautiful.
Absolutely, thank you. And, Frank, what did you think?
Yes, you know, our notion of free will is one which we... You know, we can debate, you know, endless hours upon. So I do believe that, you know, we have to have a sense of identity, whether we call it free will. You know, it's dependent upon what we interpret. But I do like the whole notion there of not being robotic, of having our own, you know, life in our hands to some certain extent, what we can do with it. And I like the fact that he, you know, the poet or the poetess in this case talks about how mundane it would be, how dull life would be if it was so predictable. So this poem really had a wonderful overture to that, to the title and to the whole notion of what free will really means when you really ponder the idea itself or the concept. It was a fantastic poem.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Katie, what do we have next?
And next we have, I don't agree. Yes, I hold respect. By who? By G. And Frank, would you like to read this for us, please?
Well, by all means.
Thank you.
This is a poem called I Don't Agree, But I Respect by Who By G. It goes like this. I struggle inside the center of having such profound respect for women in reverse and such profound intellectual outrage at the indoctrination still of an over woman into pre-created male-mindedness stripped of their innate protective instincts over our species young, sometimes even themselves, to affect ideological influence into male-mindedness. Life can be ever faithful and survivors can be led intellectually, morally, and ethically. That extra sprinkling of distortion isn't for women, it is for men. It was written by them, for them long before women were ever offered a seat at the table, a male entitled, pre-created rights, conclusions, and ideologies. I respect Eleanor Roosevelt and still, I ache for her. End of poem.
Well, what a profound right on the subject and the place of women in life and the role that, you know, men have over their lives and how it affects, you know, their ability to take care of the young and themselves at that. So just a profound right, very deeply penned. What did you think, Weaver?
Yes, this was a very deep, very interesting poem. I think it's a hard thing being a woman. It's getting better. It's getting easier for people to get where they want to get without the feminine side coming into it, being a factor. It is unfortunate that women are the ones who have children and women are the ones who have the menopause. And you know, it seems to be that their hormones, more than anything else, can be quite destructive in the eyes of an employer. So yes, I can see why this would need to be written, actually. And I enjoyed it very much. So thank you for sharing that.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. Okay, so what do we have next, Weaver?
Do you want me to comment on this?
Oh, sorry, Frank. Yes, please.
No. I don't know if Naomi's still around. I don't know who else is around. But I thought this poem, as a man myself, I thought the poem really touched on an issue that's been here for decades, for centuries. You know, it's a poem in itself that really talks about the plight of women and how they struggle in life. And I have to say, as a man, we are the sons of a woman, you know, so we can certainly relate to that. And I think that this poem gives a touch of homage to Eleanor Roosevelt. And what I do know about her, I think she really inspired manyfold of generations there during her lifespan. So I thought it was a fantastic poem, and I really like the way that she put reverence there to her and to the topic itself.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next I have Manual Typewriter by Just Michael. Laurent, I'm sorry, have I asked you quite recently or have
dropped.
I not? Oh.
Laurent has dropped, as has Naomi.
Naomi as well. Oh, my goodness. The God of the radio are in a very bad mood. Okay,
do you want me to read this poem?
Yes, Frank, if you could read that, it would be lovely. Thank you.
All right. This is called Manual Typewriter, and it's by Justin Michael, and it goes like this. Not a modern kind, but vintage. An antique model with a black frame, just the right amount of rust. Some would say patina, made by Underwood. Each key punch sends a thin arm flying upwards, which slaps against the drum. With a satisfying thud through the letter G, it feels a bit sticky, even after liberal amounts of word 40. No showpiece, I imagine, the woman who could type 60 words a minute on this machine, as her boss droned, mechanically, oblong about cord city, sail subtly by boff I mean man, and by woman I mean secretary, because back in the day that's how Rose used to play out, when conformity was preordained, and people were only expected to know their place in the poem.
Well, beautiful read, Frank. And, you know, this poem hardly gets to the last poem where the man rules the, you know, the world around women. And, you know, they had to know their place. Otherwise, they just didn't fit in. So a fantastic write on the subject of women's place in time, you know, to the roles that men and women played, the boss and the secretary. So fantastic write, beautifully written, and excellent read, Frank. What did you think of the poem, Weaver?
Well, yes, I agree with everything said here so far. I started work at 15 and a half. There was no way I was ever going to go into being a secretary or being an office or, you know, punch a typewriter, never. So I went into electronics and worked on gun sights. So I went into Spitfires, which were made at that particular place during the war. So it was a fascinating job, and I can see why, you know, it's very, as I said to you already, I suppose it's very difficult. We have our place, and we don't really want to have our place. We want to have any place we want. And that is something that's happening now, far more than I ever did, and I am applauding it. So thank you very much for that. Just Michael, I enjoyed it so much.
Great comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Frank, you read it. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, it touches much of what you said about the poem, the prior poem. You know, it talks about the plight of a woman again. And it's a very inspirational type of two poems, very inspirational. You know, and oddly enough, it's written by two men. I just thought it was fantastically, you know, observant of what, you know, what the roles are, unfortunately, in our societies. And they still are, you know, predominantly, you know, dominated by male. But in the end, I think that I have to give credit to women in general who have adjusted through the generations of time to be able to you know, be successful in life as well. You know, and that's to be appreciated as well. So this was a fantastic poem that really talked about the plight of the rose of a woman. You know, and the typewriter is one, although it's old, you know, it's not used anymore. It really was the beginning of a secretary there. So really, really took me down memory lane as well, getting back to the typewriter. But fantastic poem.
Great comment, Frank. Thank you. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have Life's Ups and Downs by Adrian 41062. And Gray, would you care to read this, please?
Sure. Life is never plain sailing. So we know what's coming next. No matter how smooth our walk, we always end up perplexed. It's how we deal with our mountains and how we grow in the depths. Here we can learn from our mistakes just by taking little steps. If life was all plain sailing, we would never do a single thing. We wouldn't learn how to swim. The mind would have nothing to bring. Life wouldn't be worth living. We would be but a shadow of ourselves. Our body and mind would feel nothing and have no knowledge or wealth. End poem. Well, that was a fantastic write on the prompt. You know, it really speaks to life and living it, you know, living it to the fullest and our ability to be free in that choice. So a wonderful write, very engaging and deep. What did you think, Weaver?
Oh, sorry. I put my mute on and then off again and then on. That, yes, life's ups and downs. That's such a true thing about life is the fact that you never know what's going to happen. It's just the unpredictability of it all. And yeah, we do learn from our mistakes. We have to. Because if we don't, we're just going to keep making the same mistakes. So yes, looking back is a good idea, looking forward, but thinking about what you're doing right now is probably the best thing you can do. Just keep yourself in the moment and do the best you can, I reckon. And life is never going to be plain sailing, but we can make it a little bit easier, I think. So thank you for that. Beautifully written.
Thank you, Weaver. Great comment. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
Well, there's a poem that's obviously very introspective and very philosophical. You know, I like the fact that it begins each stanza with, if life was, you know, the app, you know, if life was never plain sailing, then of course, if life was all plain sailing. There's a dichotomy here of two contradictions here of what life could be, you know. But I like the fact that the sincerity in this poem that's reflected in this poem. You know, when you write poetry of this nature, you really dig deep and down your soul to really, you know, reveal to us, the readers, what your mind is saying and trying to express. I like the last two lines there, where it says, a body and mind would feel nothing and have no knowledge of wealth. I do believe that. I think the consciousness that we have, although at times we don't use it much, but when we apply it, it's when we become very deep and less shallow. So I thought it was a fantastic observation, Tom. On the topic of life in itself and its up and downs.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Okay, where are we next?
Next we have Inescapable Truth by Matt 29. And Gray, could you read this, please?
Sure. The journey of life is to venture forward into the unknown. If every day we're able to predict it, then the thrill would vanish. Our sense of bliss to overcome the odds and to strive for better. All these learnings and mistakes would cease to exist. The need for unpredictability. Sadie.
Gray, is everything all right? Could you go on silent? Gray.
Do you want me to continue then? I can redo the poem.
Yes, please, if you would.
Inescapable Truth by Matt 29, and it goes like this. The journey of life is to venture forward into the unknown. If every day we're able to be predicted, then the thrill would vanish. Our sense of growth to overcome the odds and strive for better. All these learnings and mistakes would cease to exist. The need for unpredictability makes us better people, giving us a reason to strive on and discover new things, travel to different places and taste the customs and scents, train hard for a sport and become victorious. All these things are able to make us feel and experience life. Without these, we would still be drawn in caves, hunting wild animals and living the crudest of lives. Our need to be better is what makes every day different, to surround ourselves with different flavors and colors, experiencing different climates in altitudes like that, seeing the beauty created by mixing colors and in nature, watching the mastery of the sea and learning from its calmness. In essence, our destiny rests on us discovering new flavors regularly. I do apologize. I had it skipped so late, my hour. My eyes have wandered at times.
No, you did that beautifully. That day. It happens to all of us. It's horrible when it does, but it's not even noticeable. Nobody noticed anything. And Gray, are you back?
Yes, I am.
Gray?
I didn't get a chance to hear the poem read, but just skipping through it, I really liked it. You know, it really speaks to, again, to life and living it, you know, to the fullest. And then I really liked the last sentence. In essence, our destiny rests on us discovering new flavors regularly. You know, we're always searching for a new flavor, and I think that's part of life. Well done. What did you think, Weaver?
Yes, I agree with you, but I tend to think searching for a new flavor and color, it's actually can make you miss what you've got if you need to always look for something different. And you know, and within that moment, you will miss what's happening because you're trying to find something different. I could be wrong. People can do this, I suppose. But yes, I thought it was very well written, and I love the idea of it. That you know, it's the last stanza says it all. In essence, our destiny rests on us discovering. So yes, that's what it is for us: discovery. It's not. It's power, perhaps as well. But yes, I think it's we need to have changes in our lives, and otherwise we stagnate. And so I agree with that. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Frank, you read it. What did you think?
Well, you know, the title itself is self-explanatory, inescapable truth. There's so much about our evolution as mankind. We go through, our ups and downs. We go through experiences, and it's incredible that after thousands of years, mankind has been on this planet. We evolved to what we are now. You know, I think that the whole notion of learning different things, experiencing new things, not being stagnant, is part of our evolution. You know, some of us are, I consider myself adventurous. So there's some that I know that are not adventurous. And I think the whole notion of, destiny in itself is dependent on it's only a word that sometimes can never be fulfilled. But I think the whole notion of discovering life and living it to its fullest, it can be a journey. It can be a wonderful journey. And I say that through my experience. I don't regret much of that. I do regret many things, but at least taking the risk on journeys is something that brings you satisfaction in the end if you seek this type of journey, of course. Fantastic, right?
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Weaver, do we have a short one that we could post? We've only got 3 minutes left.
Yes, I think so. We have The Order by Lawrence. Pick 7. No, I can't read it. My voice is gone. Ray, could you read this, please?
Sure. The Order by Lawrence 67. The Adventures of Nigel, the Fat Cat, and his homie, Alfie. Liu, can I help you? Nigel, yes, I will have the Eleanor Roosevelt on a Rough Rider stick sprinkled with flavored kibble bits and lightly dipped in a burgundy sheep dip sauce, and I'd like it with life and flavor, predictably. And Alfie, what will you have? Alfie, yes, let me have the all-you-can-eat Liu White Dove over medium and sautéed onions, please. Pronto, chop, chop, okay? Okie dokie, Smokey. Liu, huh? And end poem. I really liked it. I liked it. You know, it was cheeky in your face and well presented. What did you think, Weaver?
Yes, it was very, very good. Most of these things I know nothing of. So you'll have to excuse me. I wouldn't know what a Rough Rider is. But I thought it was so funny, and I love the fact that you brought Ryu in. It was great. So okie dokie, Smokey. I like that a lot.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the poem was, of course, very witty there. And, of course, it had a sense of humor, which was very abundant to some certain extent. I thought the poem was great. And really quick, the Rough Riders is a mention to Theodore Roosevelt, her husband, who was a president one time. He was a member of the Rough Riders. So that's how that comes in play there, Weaver. But
right.
The poem was very, very witty. Very witty.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
Excellent comment, Frank. Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank you folks for calling in to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time tonight. Much love, everybody. Have a good night.
But I want to take
too.
Care, my friends.
You
and
too.
I hope
good
you
night, all.
It's better.
Oh, yes.
Take care.
Good night,
everyone.
There's a window there, Weaver.